tell me first about your experience on a film set here in New Mexico in the 80s.
Yeah, so, and I want to make a shout out to the film industry here now, because I, you know, people take this as like me condemning it. That's not the case at all. New Mexico has actually one of the best film programs in the country, and I'm very proud to be a native New Mexican. I'm proud to be a part of it. I just feel like there is, and I'm going to be blunt, a rape culture in Hollywood that has been here since the inception and that is not being dealt with. And honestly, I don't know that what I went through in 1989 would have a meaningful way to report and have a positive outcome today. I'm really not sure. That's how concerned I am about this issue. It's not fun for me to talk about, but I don't know that someone going through what I went through would have any more protections, meaning none, than I had at the time. That your SAG card is everything in film.
Screen Actors Guild.
Screen Actors Guild. If you don't get it, you cannot work in Hollywood. I was living in New Mexico. I wanted to go off to LA, but everybody said you can't go there without your SAG card. So here comes this really absolutely drex of a B-movie sci-fi thing.
And so if you don't have a SAG card, it's really hard to get a part because you need a SAG card.
Exactly.
It's sort of like a double, you know. But so how do you get the SAG card? You got to get into a part anyway.
Yeah. No, and so yeah. There's a – and I'm glad you're making that point, because it's there's a desperate quality to it where you're just like, oh, my God, anything that can get me in this doorway, because it is that, you know, you'll never get there because you don't have it, but you can't get it because you don't have – I mean, it's just – it goes on and on and on. It's a hamster wheel. And so when you finally break through, especially in a state like New Mexico where no one was getting speaking parts back then, and I'm not like touting myself as a great actress. I'm just saying that was one of these very rare opportunities where they're casting speaking roles in New Mexico, which is like never happened. So I go to the first audition. It's a horrible script. And, you know, and I'm the thing that sets my radars off is that my script says that I'm just going off with my best friend into the woods because we're sick of the world and we're just going to go camping. So I'm showing up in logging gear. Every single girl there was in hot pants or bikini tops or whatever. So I'm looking around thinking pretty obviously, because I'm in my corduroys and my, you know, flannel shirt, I must have the wrong room or the wrong script or something. So I'm showing my script to all the girls and they're like, no, this is it. I'm like, whoa. You know, first thing goes through your head is like, what wasn't I told? And the second thing goes through your head is, what do these girls know? You know, because I'm not seeing anything particularly suggestive in my script. It's just a camping scene, right? So I go through the read, and as I'm about to leave, the director says, do you do nudity? And I went, oh, okay, that explains the lobby. You know, this is all right. And I was pretty no, this is not my thing, you know. So I just took off, didn't think about it. For some reason, they called me back. I told my agent, okay, I told them I don't do, oh, don't worry about it. Don't. Everybody was just like, don't worry about it. Don't ask questions. It's your SAG card, blah, 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 blah. So I was suppressing all these fears that were starting to build up, and I went again, and, you know, now they want to know how I scream or something. It was this is horrible B-movie thing. And as I'm leaving, once again, do you do nudity? And at that point, I was pretty pissed. I was like, how clear can you be, you know? So I was rude, and I wasn't a rude person back then, but I was so angry. So, and I just wanted to piss them off. So I was just like, no, I don't do this. I'm not going to, you know, just leave me alone, basically. Just stop, okay? I'm not interested, you know? And so I forgot about it. Like a month later, something like that, I get this breathless call from the casting agent. You got the part. Oh, my God. Nobody ever gave you got it. You know, and all this stuff. Everybody's calling. Like somehow everybody knew before I did. And I've just got this horrible feeling in my chest of like, what am I getting into? Like, there's something going on here. Why were those girls like, why do they, you know, I felt awful about it. It's such a weird feeling to be so excited to have the thing, the holy grail, and feel like you're just going to throw up from it. And it was just this creeping feeling of something's horribly wrong here. And I was, you know, pushing it all down. And the thing is, the first day on the set, it was the Puya Cliffs in northern New Mexico, which is, if you've ever been there, it's an Anasazi ruin. It's 200 feet off the ground. It's way in the middle of nowhere. We had to drive from the hotel for a while to get there. And I hadn't done a, like, feature before, so I was nervous. I get on the set. We do the campfire scene or whatever. And it was a lot easier than I expected. I had all these stories in my head from acting class and stuff. And it was just simple. You know, just say your lines, make them real, look at the right lights, the right camera, whatever. You're done. So like all these terrible fears about could I do this as an actress were like, I could do this. And I really, all these years of training and stuff, I felt like this is my life's calling. Like finally things make sense. I'm going to be doing this. And I was so happy. I got home to my boyfriend. I told him about it. We were just like, oh, yay, this is great. Get on the set the next week because that's the next call. And my lead actor, and he was all over me. And, you know, like in the van drive from the hotel up to the cliffs, he would leap over seats in the van to squeeze in next to me to get me to touch him and kiss him. And he kept talking about this scene that's coming up and we need to loosen you up. Like one of his quotes was like, we need to get you to the drinks tray at the party. Like I still remember that because like, it's tattooed on my brain because it's the weirdest line, like a pickup line or something, you know. And I kept asking other actors, can I, you know, could you just get between me? And, oh, no, he's just, yeah, everybody was just like laughing. It was like the Coliseum watching, you know, the fight or something. They just thought it was hilarious. So I'm just, you know, I'm trying to deal with this as my first day, like for this scene with this actor and stuff. And I'm just trying to, like we all do, just sort of get through it, you know. And we get through the scene and it's just everything's really uncomfortable. He's really awful. I don't know what to do. I get home.
Was it like a romantic scene or something?
The script was that we get invaded by aliens. The script is very vague, and you're only given sides here and there. You're never given the whole script. So you're given, you know, your scene coming up. And the scene was a pretty simple, like, you know, me and my girlfriend get invaded by aliens. We become sort of like a little more available, kind of. But it wasn't anything graphic in the script. It was just like, you know, we come to the campfire and we take a sip of something. It wasn't anything that insinuated this, like, we got to warm you up for this scene thing. It was just like, okay, I go off in the woods with him. You know, I grab my sleeping bag and we disappear. So I was thinking, okay, whatever, it's going to be sort of this insinuated thing. He wasn't acting like that. He was acting like there was going to be a full-on sex scene. I mean, there wasn't even like kissing shown in it. There was nothing in it that was physical. And yet he was acting like it was some kind of intense physical scene. And so I start crying. Like as soon as I got in the door, I just suppressed so much stress and confusion. And I just started crying. And my boyfriend was just like, what's the matter? Because he was so excited for me, you know? And I'm just like, I don't know. I'm just like, this is so awful. I feel awful. I don't know. This is supposed to be good and great. And it just feels like hell. Like, why? You know, I need you to go on the set with me because I don't know what's going on. And he'd been in advertising in New York. He was a total pro. And he was like, you don't go on other people's sets, hon. You just don't. And I just started crying. I was like, then I'm not going back there again. And he knew it was really serious. So he was like, okay, you have to understand. They're going to try and keep me off of there. He comes back with me. They send every gnarly, like, if you want any kind of Sopranos sort of, like, you know, burly mob guy that you've ever seen in your mind on TV, that's who they sent after my boyfriend. They tried to make me get out of our car and get into the studio car to go up and not let him onto the set. And I said, I'm not going up there without him. This is an unsafe environment. I'm not going without him. And they were so pissed. I mean, everybody was so pissed at me. You know, you're not supposed to challenge this. You're just this bimbo actress. Get over it, you know? And so I knew no one was on my side except my poor boyfriend. And he's like, you know, kind of getting this like crossing his arms thing and standing menacingly around so that people won't go near him, right? And finally, we just locked arms and I just said, look, I'm going to go talk to the director. If he can't tell me what I'm doing and I approve it, we're leaving. And my boyfriend was like, yeah, this is weird. I've never, you know, because he'd been in New York for 12 years doing advertising. He'd never seen a set like this. And so I go to the director and he's in his trailer. And, you know, all the directors that come out from Hollywood, they always buy like alligator boots or something. They always buy these like $10,000 cowboy boots. So he's trying to get one of them on as he's sitting in the trailer and he's like gnarling at me about, you know, what are you doing? Why is this? I said, you know, I just want to know what this scene is, because it's not whatever he's anticipating from us is way more than what's in my script. So I just need you to tell me what this scene is going to be. And he was furious. No one had ever asked him that, dared to ask him that question before. So he grabbed his boot, just like hurled it against the side of the trailer, and he screamed at me, I don't know what I do till I get on the blank, blank set. And I'm not a quick response, but when you're angry, and I just was like lightning fast, I don't effing go on the set till I know what I'm effing gonna do. And that was it for him. Like that, he just, you're going to let your boyfriend's jealousy destroy your career. And I said, my boyfriend has nothing to do with it. I am unsafe on this set. You have got a scene coming up that appears to be extremely sexualized. I didn't agree to it. What's going on? And he was just like, you're never, you know, blah, blah, blah. He just stormed out, like classic, you know, paper flying in the air kind of feeling, you know. And I just, I was shaking. I was crying. I was just like, I can't be here anymore. So I grabbed my boyfriend. We went to my trailer just as a tech guy is installing, and the only reason I know this is because my boyfriend knew what they were, a listening device behind the toilet in my trailer. And my boyfriend spotted it and screamed at the guy. And the guy was like this panic tech guy and goes running and rips it out from behind the toilet and goes tearing off. And I was just like, we're leaving now. we are going to negotiate this at home in the safety of my home. And we're not like, this is, we have to go. This is insanity. Whatever this is, I don't know what it is, but I never agreed to it. We're going. They barricade the exit. Big old moving van, you know, one that holds like 30 crew or whatever, is blocking the one dirt road on the entire Pouillet Cliffs. We drove that whole thing, chased the entire time by the entire tech crew. We barely managed to punch the locks down in time to keep them from actually breaking into our vehicle. They were on the roof. They were on the hood. They were jumping to try and tear the doors open. They were on the back of it. They were. There was an entire tech team sicked on us to try and stop us. And we drove all the way around, and it's Pouillet Cliff, so there's dust everywhere. It looked like one of those old Westerns. I mean, it's crazy. Like it was a cinematic chase scene. It was weird. It's like we're in a movie that's a movie that's like, it was the weirdest feeling. And we get towards the exit again, and there's this guy blocking it. And we just looked at each other like, do we both agree that it's better to hit this guy than whatever the, you know, what is going on here? And it was just this desperate look of like, let's just go. We went past him on two tires. Pouillet Cliffs is 200 feet above the ground. If we had rolled, I don't know that I would be here talking about this because that's how narrow that road was. And when I finally get home, on my answering machine, there's all these messages. I was so angry that I erased a bunch of them, which I regret now. But the one I did save was from the casting lady. And she just berated me. She basically, so the reason I play this is because I want people to understand mine is not some lonesome case. This is what they do. This is how they do it. I talked to another woman who'd been blacklisted from Hollywood. And she said, yeah, that message is textbook. Every single kind of type of pressure and intimidation that they do is in that one message.
I've been thinking about all the things that could possibly happen to you because of this, and I don't want you to ruin your whole acting career over it. Whatever it is, I hope nobody on the set was so mean and horrible to you that they caused you to have to do this. But, you know, all they have to do is call SAG and pull your card, and from now on for the rest of your life, you'll come up not cleared for work, and that's the end. I can't imagine what would be so important to cause you to do that to yourself. They might not do that, but, you know, they could. They probably might be mad enough to, but who knows. Anyway, please think clearly. I'm not sure that you have an idea of how important this is and what exactly that you've done here. And I'm not sure if you understand the ramifications of what it will do to the company and what they can do to you to make up for it. Not that they want to do anything to you. I'm sure everybody likes you and they don't want to. But please think very seriously and call me tonight because I think we can fix this if we can get you back to work in time to not have it destroy your life.
Wow, that's pretty threatening. What was your reaction when you got that?
I was in a bunker mode. I mean, I was the thing that was scariest is, so I hadn't heard from anybody except through these messages. I was absolutely terrified. And then I find out, you know, I'm in Albuquerque near the campus, that they're going to be coming over the next 2 days to shoot on campus. So I was absolutely petrified. I'm just like in bunker mode because I don't even have a place to understand why this happened. The hardest part for me was just there were whatever 80 girls at that audition who clearly knew what they were in for and clearly wanted to do whatever it is they wanted. So the hardest part in this whole entire story for me was why me? It didn't make any sense. I wasn't cooperating. I wasn't even voluptuous. I was a scrawny dancer. I looked like a boy. You know, when I went to the audition, I'm logging outfit. I just looked like a tall, skinny boy. I mean, nothing about it made any sense to me. And so, you know, there was this aspect of, okay, there's a power dynamic in forcing someone to do something they don't want to do, which is, you know, I guess the point of me talking about all this is just I want people to understand that this whole dialogue about being touched on a set or, you know, harassed or whatever, bless those actresses for speaking up. But people need to understand it is the tiniest tip of the iceberg of what actually goes on. There's so much worse things happening on sets. And the reason I'm speaking up is because I feel like, you know, I went and called attorneys. I made a whole, I've got the whole storyline, the timeline, the days. I've got everything that happened because I was trying to get somebody to take my case because they were threatening me with $250,000 lawsuit for obstruction of the process. And so I documented it meticulously and no lawyer would touch it everyone was like, the film industry is too powerful. We're not going to take this. You're not going to win. You shouldn't have done this. I mean, it was a real serious blame the victim culture, you know. And it reminded me of that. I don't know if you've seen it, but when Barbara Walters is interviewing Corey Feldman, because he's finally...
I have not, but I've heard. Yeah.
Corey is my big hero right now because that kid was severely abused by Hollywood. And the courage it takes now with as much damage as he weathered from that to come out and say it. As a victim, I can't even, that kid deserves every medal you can give him.
Talk about your casting agent's call there and the threat implicit in it and how serious that threat
it's
was.
It's dead serious. If they, that's the little game that they play with every actor, every frightened actor who's been cornered on a sit and made to do something they didn't agree to, which is, we're going to pull your SAG card and you will never work again. And the problem with that is it's true. That threat from her... I never worked again. No one would touch me. Agent dropped me. I had to leave New Mexico. I had to go. I just had to leave the state because no one would touch me. No one would talk to me. I was the pariah that, you know, messed with the film industry and whatever. And so it is what I call a rape culture. And it's the same way that the rape culture works, which is to blame the victim.
What did that mean for your career? You were going to be an actress?
Yeah, and... I had done a bunch of training. I'd been acting since I was like five. I mean, I worked with all the big acting teachers at the time. That they're the ones who helped get me the part because they believed in me. You know, I mean, there was a whole system in place for me to go do that. And I really felt, like I said, on that first day on set, I thought, oh my God, I found my life's work. Everything that I've been working on so hard, culminating in this, this feels right. And it was just completely ripped away from me. And that was 30 years ago. And I have never been on a big set since. I mean, I do stuff in post-production because it's safe.
You're a Foley artist now. You're adding
Foley
sound.
It's
quite an art.
I love doing it.
Yeah, but how did you find your way to that, can I ask?
Well, one of the places that I sort of retreated to survive this, because there's a lot of processing that had to go on. Part of it was a realization, because I come from child abuse, that I was kind of a victim mentality. And there is a predator culture in Hollywood. It is a very predatory culture. And there is a serious rape culture in Hollywood that is not – this isn't something new. This is just the first time actresses have felt as a group empowered to speak about it. The history of Hollywood is a rape culture. Ask Marilyn Monroe. Ask Frances Farmer. Frances Farmer was institutionalized because of the horrific on-set experiences she had. They were completely institutionalized. It was expected that you could torture an actress on camera like that to the point where she went insane, and that was fine. Rita Hayworth, these are old stories, and this is the paradigm, and there is no protection. Speaking as an actress in 1989, there was no place I could go. There was no HR, there was no hotline, there was no nothing, and honestly, I'm not sure that there is now.
I know that women are organizing now in Hollywood. What do you think needs to happen? And do you think it is happening?
So my ultimate goal is to protect the most vulnerable. I feel like one thing that is outrageous to me and that has become just the norm in Hollywood is children without any guardian or parent doing really intense scenes, like some of them very sexualized, some of them very, you know, whatever, without any parent or guardian present. And when you hear the Corey Feldman story, it really was his parents just handing him off to the studio to these really creepy men who were just exploiting these kids. And I think I would like to see a reform where you can no longer have a child on set, no matter what the scene is, without an authorized parent or guardian there on the set. No more child all by themselves, because when I experienced what I experienced, and it was again that why me, so I asked, I'd made friends with a woman in Malibu, really nice lady who was taking screenwriting classes from a real pro in LA, I won't get name his name, but he was known for these pulp fiction novels, all about just the horrors of Hollywood, basically, you know, the kind of Hollywood Babylon stuff, and it was all just these fiction things, but he got all his data from LAPD police records, and so she told him my story. Because I wanted to know why me. He said, you know, it's interesting because this follows a certain pattern I've seen in my research, which is you get an unknown actress on a remote set, you film a really compromising and or rape scene, it's a closed set, which is what they're going to do to me, you sell the unedited version to the porn markets overseas, and then you sell the edited version to the U.S. distribution so there's no one to back up the story of the actress. And because everyone on the set is in on it, which was the weirdest part of this whole film. Everybody was against me. It's going to be your story against an entire film industry. I can't prove this. I got away, so I can't prove any of this. But I can tell you that I've done a lot of looking into it, and I've had a lot of industry people say it really feels like they were going to do an A-B kind of thing, you know, the safe little U.S. market, and then they were going to do some really compromising scene with you. And so when she told me that, instead of it shocking me, it was the first time I started to come back to life because it finally made sense to me what was going on, but I still didn't understand why me. And so I asked her to just ask him one more time. Why me? Why the flat-chested whatever girl versus all these other girls who are going to do this? And he came back and he said, you know, this is why I think this is what really happened. The porn market overseas is so jaded. They don't want to see a girl who knows what she's getting into. They want to see an actual rape. Who, just even walking in as the casting person, looking at that whole group of people, would have stood out the most as the one least likely to be willing to participate in this. I mean, you just by your way of dressing, it was clear that you didn't know what you're getting into. So again, this is not, I can't say this is what's going on, but I can say that there is an undercurrent below all these claims by actresses that is way darker and way more dangerous and way more frightening and way more threatening. So my whole thing is not so much to prove I'm right or to yell about the system. It is I want powerful, meaningful onset and offset, anything where you're interfacing with someone from Hollywood, protections for the talent. And I personally don't feel like there are any.
What would that look like? Like how do you make that happen?
That is the dialogue. The first thing I want to see is no child on a set without an approved parent or guardian. I don't care what the scene is. No child at an audition without an approved parent or guardian, period. No more, oh, mom, go away and let the guys, you know. It just and women are participating in this, too. There have been rapes in Hollywood by powerful women. It's not a story told very much. It's about power, and it's about abuse of power. And when you don't allow protections on set for your talent, they're going to keep pushing the boundaries and pushing the boundaries, and it's going to be worse and worse and worse. And I want to end this. I don't want anyone to go through what I went through because, in fact, it did destroy my career. It destroyed my faith in the industry. I still love film. I will always love film. I love doing sound for film. I think New Mexico has one of the best film programs in the world, honestly. I just want really strong protections for the talent, and I'm not seeing it, and I'm not seeing a dialogue about it. I'm seeing, oh, he groped me. That's not what goes on. When you're on a closed set, you need some kind of protections, and you need them contractually. Oh, and the one other point I want to make, because you would probably burst out laughing on this. When I was first researching to find out what are my protections now, because I wanted to see if anything had changed.
Now, as in modern. Now, okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. as in 2017. One of the things I discovered that just came up randomly on the Google search was porn regulations. At the high levels of porn, what they're required to do is mapped out almost by the molecule before they sign that contract, meaning that a high-level porn star has more protections and more understanding of exactly what she is going to be required to do on camera than anyone in Hollywood, even the highest-level actresses. Why do porn stars have more protections on set? That's just like, that blew my mind. It's like this, okay, if nothing else, then maybe we need to look to the porn markets to find out how to write up these protections.
Interesting.
I don't know because I'm not a part of the unions or any of, you know, they're not going to let me. I'm the black sheep, you know.
And the idea is that Rape Crisis Center is already a reporting hotline. So there wouldn't have to be any infrastructure built up. They would just have to sort of increase the types of phone calls that they took and how they handle them. So what I'm working on right now to implement quickly is start out with a hotline set up with the Rape Crisis Center so that they can weed through the complaints and determine which ones are viable and get them to SAG or whoever. Second thing that can be implemented right away, and that's what we're really pushing for, is Rape Crisis Center already does a very effective sexual harassment workshop at UNM. It's gone over very, very well. And so I would like to suggest immediately that the first thing that happens is that all film companies coming into New Mexico agree to have this harassment seminar as the sort of first day of their set, basically. So everybody's on board. And that way, if there's any kind of breach of protocol, it's not really on the company because the company has already trained everybody on how they should behave on set and that sort of thing. And that way people can more effectively go after the perpetrator without there being this kind of cover-up environment, you know, that tends to happen of, you know, everybody just hiding it from people because they're so afraid of the consequences. I would like to suggest that everybody, if they can, come to a panel. It's with the New Mexico Women in Film. And it's a panel at the Center for Contemporary Arts. It's going to be Monday, February 12th at 3 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. It's called Turning the Tide on Sexual Harassment, A Path Forward. Quite a really great women's advocacy group. There's going to be Giovanni Rossi Presley, Las Cruces Representative Nathan Small, New Mexico Girls Make Movies, Jocelyn Jansen, Wiz Allred, and New Mexico Secretary of State Maggie Toulouse-Oliver, all talking about constructive actions that can be taken to turn around a toxic culture and build a future that is safe and fair for all people in New Mexico. So for those of you who are listening who've experienced harassment, who are concerned about it, who would like to make sure that New Mexico is kind of cutting edge in terms of keeping this from happening on our sets, please, please, please come to this event. I think there's going to be a Q&A afterwards. But it's just an important way to educate people that we do have rights. We just all need to know what they are, and we also need a reporting system. And so I will be there with Jim Harvey to present our proposal to this panel and work as hard as we can to make New Mexico hopefully a template for all the states that are going through this, and that we can somehow create an effective inroad that makes it harder and harder for people who tend towards this type of behavior to even be able to implement it in any way.